Thank you all so much for coming. I'm just gonna get straight into it. If you have questions, feel free to raise your hand or you can wait to the end, but you know, we're gonna be covering a lot of stuff. So, you know, do what works for you and I'm happy to communicate back to you. So, thanks for coming. This is Memory Mini Comics Workshop, Mining Our Memories and Exploring Our Senses, and only 6 panels. Let's see if I got this working. Oh, nope. There we go. Okay, so my name is Laura Antal. Is that working? I guess I gotta click. Okay. I am a cartoonist, an illustrator, and an art director from Brooklyn, New York. My graphic novel, Ronin the Endless Sea of Stars, was the winner of the 2023 Graphic Medicine Award and was the Kirkus Star Review. I am a cartoonist who does a lot of freelance comics. Some are my own writings, autobiographical opinion work. I work a lot with the Washington Post. Some of them are collaborators with writers, and some of them are also collaborations with newsrooms doing comic reportage. So I've done a lot with the Washington Post and their news, lifestyle, health, and op-ed sections, travel as well, a bunch. They're great. I also do a lot of graphic medicine work, so I work with different types of either practitioners, frontline workers, educators, nonprofit organizations, you name it, around creating comics that have to do with the combination of health and medicine, the combination of medicine, health, and sequential storytelling. I also like to write fanciful stories. I'm currently working on a graphic novel that's a sort of queer sci-fi romance, and I am an executive producer on the Witch Wave podcast, which is a podcast all about magic and creativity. And so I cover a lot of very tangible corporeal things and a lot of ethereal magic realism sparkly things. And like all of you, you have very important personal reasons on why you make work. I'm trying to get that bread out there so that I can support this beautiful dog. This is Chuck, he's 14, he's a Chihuahua. He's in here because I just wanted to share him, and it's my presentation, so here I go. Look at that. He's 14. Look how great he looks. Anyways, I'm doing it for the dog. So, in this storytelling workshop, I wanted to talk about different evocative and sensory storytelling techniques. So what exactly does that mean? This is not a coined term, this is just a way to describe a set of approaches that you might use in your comics to try and create connection with the reader. So we're gonna get to brass tacks here. Evocative. The definition of evocative is bringing strong images, memories, or feelings to mind. And sensory is of relating to sensation or of the senses, sight, touch, taste, smell, etc. So what this all means is these are storytelling techniques that either help express or invoke feels, big feels, relating to the reader in a very emotional way is a great way to get different points across to your different points across from your story. And so, yeah, this workshop's all about how to bring maximum feels to the stories that you want to tell. So I wanted to show a couple examples. What does this actually look like in comics? So the first example, wow, the color's crazy. The first example here is by Vera Broxall. I might be butchering their last name. From their graphic memoir called Be Prepared, which is about them encountering or visiting a summer camp that ended up being quite a transition for them, quite hectic, quite gross. And so actually this is a great example of how evocative and sensory storytelling can show isolation and the grotesque moments. So the ways that it is evocative is that it is focusing on sort of small specific details. We're getting a sense of the time and place, the nature, but also in this scene, she's approaching a latrine that is quite tongue-in-cheekly named Hollywood, and basically encountering something that is horrifying. And so you can tell by the details of certain things like the graffiti and like this, that is a specific location, but also, you know, we have a character sniffing the air. She's capitalizing on our sense of smell, or at least invoking the idea that the character is smelling something horrific in order to assault us with the same feelings that she was assaulted with when she first approached this scenario. Another example is E.M. Carroll with their book, Through the Woods. If some of you know their work, they do a lot of really very sensory, electrifying kind of stories, and often they're horrifying, macabre, or kind of sexy. This is the beginning of one of their short stories in this collection, and they are sort of using evocative storytelling through, again, emphasizing different details and components that make up a memory. Something else that they're doing in this is the language is adding a whole other level of that sensory experience. The language sort of mirrors what we're seeing in the panels. My brother has a fine coat, a vest the color of moss. However, just even in that description, they're adding a whole other veneer of fairy tale. You know, I could just see that as green, but they're trying to evoke nature, moss. Same thing, they're talking, we're looking at this image of this woman, a plump young wife with starry eyes. Any other description could have said an eager woman, a happy woman. There's a million ways to describe what we're looking at, but through the choice of words, they're really trying to create a certain sense of mood. If you know their work, they're setting you up for a very fairy tale, happy beginning, which they will undoubtedly destroy with something horribly gruesome. And then, Masters of Comics, Jillian and Mariko Tamaki. This is from This One Summer. This is a very clear example of sort of evocative and sensory storytelling techniques. They are not only sharing, they're literally pacing out an entire day to give us the mood, a sense of how these people felt throughout this day. So by emphasizing moments where characters are touching, where characters are ripping things and making, and you can hear the sounds, where there's smells, where there's like very lovely sights. I mean, this is a very dreamy page. And actually, I think adding the time kind of helps that you know they're going through it in a very sensory way. These people are being led by their senses throughout the day, just kind of exploring things as they are intrigued by them. Okay. So if creating a comic is like building a house, then these evocative and sensory storytelling techniques are essentially the bricks. And so continuing with this perfect analogy, essentially you can think about these things as the bricks that you use to create, to add to the greater structure that is your comic story. So like bricks, they can be layered. They really help create sort of nuance and texture to your story. They strengthen every time you have a story where you take a moment to get into how the character feels, how the moment feels, you're really creating a stronger experience for the reader. And then you can just choose to expose them like a lovely brick wall in your living room, or you can have them covered. They're under the plaster. They're just a part of the fabric of what you're saying, and it's not necessarily the subject. I think, you know, that you can tell the difference between maybe, let's say, like a Marvel mainstream kind of superhero comic and how they choose to incorporate these techniques, but is really more about the plot and the characters versus somebody who might do something more poetic and they really want you to sit with the feeling of that moment, the sense of being in that moment. So to that effect, this is essentially a technique for your creative toolbox. This can be used in any medium. This, of course, is relevant in comics, but this is just as relevant in prose, in movie making, etc. And it can be used with any genre, and no matter what, it's going to create a richer, more nuanced reader experience. And so the reason with this workshop is focusing on your memories is because it's a really good place to start practicing these techniques. You were already there, you already know how it felt, you have a lot of strong feelings about it, and it's a great way to figure out how to start cultivating those memories and those feelings to be things that you can use in your stories. Whether you end up making autobiographical work or you end up making high fantasy, sort of doesn't matter. This is a thing that you'll be drawing on from your experience going forward in any kind of story that you do. So we're gonna keep talking, but we're gonna do little exercises as we go through the workshop. So the first thing, I'm gonna give everybody about a minute, but what I want you to do is pick one of your own memories. Or rather, pick part of a memory. Memories are very big and complicated things that are connected by a web of experience and situation and setup. We're just gonna work with a small part of a memory. This memory can be big or small. It can be your wedding day, or it could be literally what you ate for breakfast. And since we only have six panels, we're not really gonna worry about all the setup. the before, during, and after plot-wise, we are going to focus on how it felt for you. So what made it memorable? What made it special? What made it difficult? We want to know what that memory like was not from anyone else involved in the scenario, but specifically you. So for this first minute, just think of a memory. Some of you may have already come with a memory in mind. If not, this is the chance to think about it. Feel free to jot down any errors or just pull up what you think you're going to work on in your mind. And I'm just going to give just a bit of a minute to figure it out. Oh yes, and sorry, if you do not have drawing pencils, utensils, I should have said that, there are some paper up here, some drawing tools. Feel free to come up and grab what you need. This will be an active workshop. There will be drawing. There will be sketching. Be prepared. Okay, just a little bit longer. And I think we're going to continue. So don't worry if you haven't thought about all the ins and outs of the story. We're going to be working on how to bring it to life throughout this workshop. So, and as I'm talking, feel free to zone out, pop back in if you're thinking about your memory. It's all for the bit. Okay, so the next thing we're going to do is throughout this workshop, I'd love for you to walk out here with a completed, excellent, beautiful, sparkly mini comic, but I think no matter what, you're going to walk out here with a roadmap on how to complete a mini comic, even if we don't have the time to finish it all here. So a great way to start is to create a thumbnail sheet. This can be very simple. Just draw six panels on a sheet of paper, and this is where you're going to plot things out before you commit. Remember that perfectionism is the enemy of arts. This is really just think about this as like your brain on the paper. So it doesn't matter how it looks. It doesn't matter if it's polished in any ways. This is just so that you can get your brain thinking. And there's scientific evidence that brain to paper technology is one of the best technologies for ideation. So draw your thumbnail sheet, and we're going to be using this throughout the rest of the workshop. Don't worry if they're perfect rectangles or not. Mine are never. Okay. So we're going to do three exercises, and they're all going to revolve around the use of words and pictures. As you know, this is how you make a comic. The first thing I want to talk about is the combination of words and pictures can really change the context of what we are talking about. So in this panel, we've got a beautiful bouquet of flowers. And the words on this one is, she touched my hand. and my heart skipped a beat. So the words married with this picture is, you know, up for interpretation, but we're generally seeing something possibly romantic, something possibly happy. These flowers could have been sent by someone who's in a relationship. They could have been flowers that reminded them of how lovely this person is. The words really set up the context in which we understand these flowers. Change the words and we change the context. We had our last afternoon tea together. In less than 2 weeks, he would be gone. Suddenly, this bouquet means something entirely different. Maybe it is flowers from a funeral, or maybe it's flowers sent from someone who left town one night and is sending an apology for skipping out. The words really change the context on how we view this panel and this object. And to show you the breadth of what that can mean, in this one, we say, no delivery service, no card, they just appeared out of thin air. Even a bouquet of flowers can suddenly be transported into horror sci-fi realm based on how you contextualize it. And so, our first exercise, going back to that memory that you have in your head, we are gonna pick one, we're gonna thumbnail out a panel that is all about an object from that memory. So this can be an object that was integral to the memory, this can be something that was incidental in the background. You know, if you're thinking of a conversation and you were fixated on a clock on a wall, it could be the clock. It could also be an object that has come to symbolize that memory. A souvenir is a great example of that. We are going to thumbnail this on your six-panel thumbnail sheet. And so basically make a quick drawing. This is a notation as a single panel. You can put this anywhere on the six panels. We're going to recombobulate the order once we've done all the exercises. So just get in there and pick an object and draw it. And it can be wordless, or if you'd like to, add some words to contextualize it. So I'm going to give everybody about 3 minutes to work on this one. Oh yeah, and just as an example, I chose a book and I said, she had left the book at my house. Another place? I can't even read my handwriting. That's why you know it's a thumbnail. I think I was going to give everybody 3 minutes, but I feel like people are moving. If anything is taking too long, don't worry. Or if it's going too fast, I'm sorry. We'll have time at the end, hopefully, to rework things. So I'm going to go to the next slide and our next exercises. So we just talked about how to contextualize images with words and contextualize objects. The other part of evocative and sensory storytelling technique is senses. I think this one doesn't require too much explanation, but in our comics, we're able, you know, a comic is generally a 2D visual experience, exceptions always pending. So it is a really powerful storytelling technique to draw in other senses in our limited experience. And you can do that in a couple different ways. Back to our flower panel, I've contextualized a little bit more with an environment, with a place. And the words we have here are the pitter-patter of the rain had come to a stop. The warm breeze carried the sweet, powdered scent of tulips. Using the text to really direct us towards what it might sound like, what it might smell like. You know, rain, you might even start evoking senses of like humidity and all these things in the reader. You know, our ability to imagine these things is incredibly strong. And so if you just direct a reader in that way, you're already creating a more engaging reading experience. And so, our second exercise, back to our thumbnail sheet, is a panel that explores our senses. So in this memory, what sensory experiences do you remember? What were the colors, the smells, the textures, the sounds, the tastes? So pick a panel, and you're going to try and explore the physical aspects of your memory. I find that this is one that I can call a lot of memories from. So if you end up having a bunch of beautiful, wonderful ideas, jot them all down. You can add on extra panels to your thumbnail sheet. It doesn't matter. The power of editing will save us at the end. So yeah, just try and get out the ideas as they come, but create one panel that focuses on some sensory aspect of this memory. So for mine, I have the apple was crisp and tart. I have a person eating the apple. Yeah, and remember that this is definitely the roadmap. Don't get boggled down too much in details of how to render it. We're just going for straight vibes, straight feels. Okay, we're gonna go to the next one. Sorry if I'm cutting you off short. Don't worry. Okay, so the last thing I wanna talk about is contrast and similarity. So again, we are working in comics in so many different, we have images and we have words, and there's a lot of variety in how those are translated into a cohesive story. And so, that's really great. Anyways, fine. The ways that you create panels, whether the content aligns and is similar and is cohesive, has a very different emotional impact on the reader versus a panel that is incongruent, dissonant, not cohesive. And so this first panel is an example where things are sort of in alignment with one another. She had a knack for all things green. She grew roses, daisies, petunias, and flowers I'd never heard of. I wanted it to be just like her, someone who could grow things from dirt. You know, there's actually more color, it's hard to see, but whatever. It's a beautiful rendering of this lovely flower, bright colors, or lovely bouquet, bright colors. There's a description of flowers with the captions. There's really not a lot of dissonance. We're getting a very harmonious panel here that is about a very harmonious subject, and that sort of all is in alignment and really helps create a very uplifting, wistful mood on this panel. Pair that with something that maybe is a little more dissonant. They sat on my countertop, a monument to everything that had spoiled, stems rotted, buds wilted and dry. So not only are we literally creating more contrast in the way that we've rendered this with bold black and white shadows, it almost looks film noir, but also we're seeing a little more contrast with the concept of a bouquet. We're seeing actually still a quite healthy bouquet describing something that is falling apart and dying. And so there is a lot of meaning in the space between how did we get from there to here? How did we come to something that is not what it seems? And so our last exercise is all about this contrast. So as I mentioned, comics, you communicate through different ways. You've got the visuals in terms of the actual image you're drawing, but also sometimes the layout. We're not exploring that too much here. And then the text, you've got captions, you've got dialogues, you've got sound effects. And I would like you to explore these things by creating a panel that where the text and the visuals do not match, where there is high contrast. Maybe the image is joyful, but the words are sad. Maybe the caption describes the Caribbean and we see a snowy mountain. As I mentioned, the contrast creates tension and implied subtext. And as readers, we try to put the pieces together to create meaning. There is so much magic in this. This is one of my favorite things to do in comics, is to create that contrast and let the reader sort of try and read meaning in the space between. So yeah, pick a panel on your thumbnail sheet and draw something, or in thumbnail at something where the images do not meet with the words. I have a smiling, lovely portrait, and the words are, "I hated her." So I'm going to go to the next slide. So you, a lot of you here are probably creators and cartoonists, so maybe this is a little redundant. Sometimes I've presented this to people who are all new to the lovely world of comics, but this is sort of a setup on how to make a single sheet folded zine. I have a couple examples here in the front that you're happy to take a look at. I think for time's sake, we're not going to build this, but essentially, it's a fold 'em, slice 'em, dice 'em thing. And you can actually just Google 8-page zine and find this template anywhere. And like I said, feel free to take a look at my samples up here. This is what you would eventually transfer your final comic onto. I think for the sake of time, you'll have to do that as homework. I'm so sorry. I'm sorry to give you homework. But, clack. So yeah, the last thing we're doing is putting it all together. You know, I said that you could put these panels anywhere on the thumbnail sheet. That's because here's the point where you're going to remix it to make it work. You've got three open spaces, and you want to basically connect them together in whatever way your comic-making brain thinks is the best way. So you're stitching together a vignette of memory, edit, order, reorder as necessary. And essentially, this is what we would transfer over into our final mini comic. I think it's probably useful for us to spend the last couple of minutes just trying to think about ways that we can connect these stories together. For mine, I ended up moving things around, and I essentially had I hated her, everyone thought she was perfect, she brought a gift basket and stayed for tea, the apple was crisp and tart, she had left a book in my house, and I forgot what the last bit was. Hold up. There we go. And now I needed to decide, would I give it back? So these other panels can, of course, just be whatever you think is a good connector. They can also be more examples of what we talked about. You could have a panel that explores the senses. You can have a panel with high contrast. Whatever you think makes sense to coalesce it all into a narrative. Again, we're not focusing on plot, so I think if your result feels a little poetic or vignette-y, that's totally fine. So I have 1 minute left with y'all. I apologize, I've normally done this a little bit longer, so this would have been the time where we could share our stories, but I think we really just dug into the very beginning of something. Obviously, as you work on this, please share it with your friends, or if you want to bring anything up afterwards to share it with people here or me, happy to do that. But comics get better when we get feedback from people. And so I want to thank you for attending this workshop, for having me. This is my contact information. I have a newsletter. I'm on Instagram, and I will be at TCAF tomorrow at table 608. I'm also doing, I'm also on a couple panels this weekend. Sorry, that's so ugly. So please feel free to reach out, or if you have any questions about what we talked about here, come on by. But yes, does anyone have any questions now that I can answer? Oh, I did that wrong. Sorry. That I can answer in the next minute or so. Bam. There I am. This is so tiny, it's not helpful. Anyways, my name's Laura Antal. If you Google me, I exist. And I'm the only one with this name. I used to say it in all of America, but now I'm in Canada, so it's a whole new literal territory. I don't know. But anyways, thank you so much for having me. And yes, go ahead.
I'm curious if... do you have alternate techniques for silent sequences with images only? they follow kind of basically the same kind of metrics?
Do I have different techniques with silent ones?
For wordless sequence.
You know, I think that a lot of these things still apply. Like, in fact, that first example I had, if I could go back. Beep, 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 beep. Oh my gosh. Woo! Boop, 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 boop. Boop. This is Lily Carre. I didn't talk about this, but this is an example of sort of a wordless a wordless series of panels that I think is very evocative. I think you're basically, instead of, you're just not using the text to tell anything, all the visuals are showing. So I think it actually gives you an opportunity to be more sensory and evocative. You know, we see water, we've got it. You know, if there's sound effects, that's very powerful in a silent comic. I think a lot of these techniques actually really lend themselves to that. And I think even with contrast, that works too. Even if you've got, the contrast ends up being less about the immediate panel image to word, but more about how the panels relate next to each other. Like, for example, in this one, going back to the clock really helps. And actually, we didn't talk about this, but I think repetition in something like this helps with that contrast as well. I think this is an example, too, where the contrast between these images really has your emotional heart running from 0 to 60 back and forth again. And so I think all those techniques apply. You just have to figure out how to visually translate them. Okay. Any other questions? Yes.
Not exactly a question, but sure. Kind of a challenge.
Challenge, right.
Wondering if you've ever thought about how you would present this in the context of aphantasia.
In sorry?
Aphantasia, have you heard of this?
No.
So I have. It's the absence of sensory implementing mental constructs. You don't think in pictures or senses. So you can still talk about it, and I use sense storytelling, but for me it's just like a narrative callback.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not pulling from
So. Interesting. You know, it's funny, I've been talking with a fellow cartoonist who is here about how to experience something without senses. And I don't think I've come to a thought about it. And I know a lot of people in graphic medicine who use comics through different storytelling means. I said that comics are generally 2D, but I know someone who's working in literally 3D material for people who are visually impaired. That being said, I have not thought about how that might translate, but I think it's a really good question on how we can sort of create that. And you're saying it's conceptually in the void, or for people who are maybe don't have all their senses?
No, I have, like, so for me anyway, I have all my senses. And in fact, when I was a kid, before they had a name for this, I just rationalized it that I was like too in the live feed and couldn't call
of it. Got it.
So it could also translate to people who are missing senses. That's an interesting question, too. But if I think specifically, it's the inability to remember or evoke visualize. So not just things that you've experienced, but things that you want to conceptualize you didn't experience.
Right, okay.
You don't do it with the fabrication of a sense experience in your head.
Right. So I actually think with that in mind, being a documentarian of the experiences that you had is really helpful. So like, you know, this is mining your memories can be helpful, where that you were literally taking stock. Here I am in this room, and I'm noticing the color of that panel. I'm noticing the way this wood feels. I'm noticing how I sound when I'm closer or further, etc. And like trying to document those things. Sometimes, you know, I'm sure many of you have done this before. You're on the street, you hear a really interesting conversation, and you're just writing down things, or you see someone, and you're like, that's a character in here. So I feel like actually in that situation, the more you can document those things, and then when you're composing them as a creator, you can kind of mix and match them, because that's, again, sort of actually why as much as I'm talking about the storytelling technique, we're starting with memory as fodder, because there's a lot more sensory stuff that you just experience. You don't have to fabricate it, in theory, right?
Well, so about 10 years ago, I started playing with doing some memoir stuff, and the first big hurdle I ran into is like, oh, I don't have like this easy, I can pull up photographs of things, but I don't have
I see. You don't have the memory
stuff.
Recall.
I can remember the narrative, but when I want to sit down and draw what a place looked like, I'm relying on pretty sketchy information.
Got it.
I was trying to decide like how much do I want to fabricate and how much am I going to just go through research to figure out what it was. And then that got me to thinking about how I went so long without having an issue, and what you're describing is kind of my universal, I'm hyper-vigilant.
Gotcha, yeah.
Assessing and indexing everything. And
sure.
When you talk to other people with aphantasia, there are people who, on the extreme end who have severely deficient autobiographic memories to that. It's like another condition that I feel like it's, I don't know conclusively, but it's probably a case of like people don't do that,
mm-hmm.
and they don't have that record.
Yeah.
So they end up 20 years later having no memory.
Wow, yeah, that's really interesting. And this is just a really interesting train of thought. So I feel like, I guess in that scenario, I think, I mean, maybe an extra component of this is essentially what you can do forward. Here, more homework for everyone. As you're experiencing things, writing down this stuff. A lot of, like, you know, we were talking about really doing an autobiographical story, working from your memory, et cetera, et cetera. But I use a lot of these things that I've documented that I've experienced in my life in my fiction and et cetera. And so I think being a documentarian as a creator is really important, and writing those things down as they speak to you in the moment. Because in this case, if you don't have the recall, you either have to have the notes or you have to fabricate an experience to like feel it again, or you are doing research on other people who've been through that experience and what they might feel.
But from my personal stuff, I'm kind of using the integrating.
Yeah.
To become part of the story.
That's very cool. Well, thank you. That's a really interesting train of thought. I'm gonna think about that. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you all so much. Again, if you have any questions, reach out. But hopefully this will help you think about ways that you can contextualize scenes that you're writing, whether they're from your memory or whether they're straight out of your brain. Bringing it back to these sort of memory feeling bodily experiences, I think, really grounds the reader, and I'm all for it. So thank you all so much for hearing me ramble on about it, and I hope this was helpful.